Hello, and welcome to Amen Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. My name's Rob Davidson, content analyst in Awin's global strategy team, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Edwards, our global strategy director, and also Craig Foster, data analyst in our business intelligence team. Welcome back to the fold, Craig. You've been away for a while. How is life under lockdown treating you?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I feel that I'm kind of built for isolation mentally. So just an excuse. It's an excuse to stay in, if anything. I had my birthday over the course of the isolation, which is good. It was a bit of an odd one, I've got to say. But yeah, I still managed to get thoroughly drunk. I've also realised as well, hangovers are there's a kind of a beauty to a hangover during isolation as well, because you kind of waste a day that you would be wasting, you know, being bored, but instead you're concentrating on being hungover.
Well, there's a life lesson that you can take away from lockdown.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And how about you, Kev? How are you coping with it all?
Yeah, just a bit bored. I mean, I do miss the pubs, got to be said. I miss a nice country walk as well. But hopefully, when we're on the other side of this, they'll kind of feel sweeter and more satisfying when we have the opportunity to, you know, we'll all be grateful for what we've got.
A country exactly. Walk with a pub as well, that, isn't it, Kev, I suppose? So
hand. Yeah.
Now, as we are all working from home, as many of you listeners will be as well, this recording is taking place remotely. So we apologize if the audio isn't quite up to our usual high standards. However, we still have another packed schedule of content for you with three special interviews featured. First up, Craig, you're speaking to Joelle and Alex, who are members of Awin's new client partner team. What is it that you're specifically going to be discussing with them?
So those guys have been looking at trends over the past few weeks since kind of the lockdown started. They've looked at specific dates on the network with our data, and they've been kind of delving into certain sectors and how they've performed over that time. So they're drawing conclusions based on that data, and I'll be asking some questions to kind of delve into that.
Okay, great. And then Kev, you're also talking to Peter Jack from Awin's Global Operations Department, and that's about the Awin Access Initiative, isn't it?
Yeah, so Peter's being very closely involved with Awin Access, which, as he'll talk about, is a new level of service really for what we've kind of branded sort of micro SMEs, and they're typically the businesses who have never quite fitted in with any of the levels of service that Awin's offered in the past. But we've kind of learned a lot through acquiring ShareASale in the US and their kind of automated, very efficient way of working with small businesses. And so we've kind of built this new offering out, of which, as I say, Peter's been very closely involved. So he's going to be talking through how that's iterated out and sort of the how we position that and how we're working with a couple of really good brands who are have seen great results off the back of it in the early days, and how that's kind of really starting to ramp up for us as a network.
Well, finally, for a slight step away from affiliate marketing, I'm going to be speaking to Chloe Hall. Usually her day job consists of managing marketing for the affiliate business Revlifter. However, she's been throwing her efforts into a fantastic initiative called Furloughed Foodies recently, delivering cooked meals to hospital staff on the COVID-19 frontline. And so I'll be asking her all about that effort and what that has entailed over the last few weeks. Before we get into all that, though, there has been some fairly major news within the industry recently, which has to do with Amazon making some fairly significant changes to how they're working with their affiliates. What's this all about, Kev?
So, yeah, this is sort of something that's been unfolding, and it's continuing to unfold as we're recording, really. It's probably one of the biggest changes within the affiliate industry, actually. It's probably not too much of an exaggeration to say that for a considerable length of time. So Amazon, as everybody probably knows, it's huge kind of behemoth of a retailer. They run probably by far and away the largest affiliate program in terms of their reach. They probably work with by far the most amount of affiliates that are out there as well. And obviously it's a global program, so Amazon operate in a number of markets. So recently, Amazon have made a series of changes. There's kind of been three quick succession announcements that they've made. The first was that they were going to remove what we, I think, would label subnetworks. So they've referred to them as specifically as their networks, and their companies, I suppose, like Viglinks, who effectively have these third-party affiliates who sign up to them rather than Amazon directly. So they reached out to these partners and said that they were going to discontinue working with them. The second was the kind of removal of some pretty well-known publishers who they work with directly, businesses who rely very heavily on Amazon, companies such as BuzzFeed and Vox, who incidentally have kind of been beefing up their affiliate efforts in recent years and months. And probably the most impactful in terms of the number of affiliates that it's going to affect is the announcement within the last week or so that Amazon is actually making some fairly dramatic cuts to the commissions that it offers on many of their product categories. So that starts on April the 21st. So by the time that this is broadcast, the effects will probably have already been felt by publishers. As far as we know at the moment, it's specific to the US market, but typically we see decisions being made in one market rolled out to others. So that could happen. That could impact publishers in other markets. But to give you some examples about what that actually looks like in practice. So affiliate commissions on sales of pet products, furniture and home and garden items, for example, will drop from 8% to 3%. Grocery product fees will drop from 5% to 1%. And obviously this has left a number of affiliate companies and publishers really panicking, since they, as I say, they rely on Amazon for a significant portion of their revenue. Just if people want to find out a little bit more about this, there's a really useful guide available from a site called geniuslink.com. And they've listed, if you go to their blog, they've listed all the historic and current commission rates available on Amazon. And they've actually done some number crunching. And they believe that on their reckoning, the average commission rate's actually fallen from about 9% across the entire program in 2012 to about a third of that. So a little over 3% with these new rates that come into force on the 21st.
We'll make sure that we include a link to that page actually in the show notes for this particular episode so that people can check that out for themselves. But it's a seismic move by Amazon, and I guess you can look at it from a few different perspectives. I don't know, Craig, if you had any initial kind of opinions on hearing about the news and what it means for the industry.
I mean, firstly, the one of the issues that you read about when you're researching into this is the way that they actually did this. There was an email that went out, and it wasn't necessarily clear instantly from that email that rates would be dropping. They were just making changes, and a lot of affiliates weren't actually as prepared as, you know, perhaps they thought they should have been. That's obviously, you know, part of the issue. The other part of this is as well, of course, is that Amazon's demand has gone up hugely. I know you've got some stats on that yourself, Rob, but
yeah,
one of the things
go for it.
No, one of the things in that really is that, you know, Amazon, as we know, is an extremely cash-rich company, probably one of the most cash-rich companies ever to exist. Bezos is, you know, one of the richest people ever. So to suggest that, like, you know, this is purely about saving money in marketing costs is probably a bit off the mark, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, talking about the kind of like the figures that are coming out at the moment in terms of the performance, the increase in demand that Amazon has naturally seen over the course of the last month or so. Some of the stuff that I've been reading around the subject so far suggests, I mean, Amazon customers apparently are spending an estimated $11,000 a second on products via Amazon currently. They've seen the stock value increase rapidly during the crisis, and the company's worth over $1.14 trillion now. Bezos's fortune itself has increased obviously at the same time, so he's estimated to be worth around $140 billion. And I mean, obviously he's been scrutinized, he's been criticized, I think, for making a fairly marginal donation to the crisis at the moment, to an external bodies at the moment. I think he's donated around $100 million to a US food bank, which is obviously a lot more than the three of us could ever donate, but it's still 0.1% of his overall fortune. And I think that given the exceptional circumstances that are occurring right now, and that some affiliate businesses have been so dependent historically on promoting Amazon products to their traffic, and they've built businesses off the back of it, many of them quite small startups, some of whom are larger kind of organizations employing hundreds of people. And I mean, those companies are now going to be potentially struggling to monetize that traffic and to pay their salaries and pay their employees, etc. And I think it's questionable whether or not this is the right move right now. I mean, they're a business, and Amazon's obviously well known for being fairly cutthroat in its approach to achieving success in e-commerce. But given the particular crisis that's occurring around the world right now, this does seem a fairly cruel move from some perspectives.
It's pretty rough timing, really. But, you know, as you say, these are business decisions. Without kind of wanting to sort of turn it back in on Awin, you know, there are alternatives out there. I've no doubt that Amazon is one of the best converting affiliate programs out there. But with these commission rates, even with a high conversion rate, that becomes less attractive. And so, you know, there has to be an opportunity. And I think the key thing from our perspective is the Amazon Associates program, from what I can tell, is kind of very much like a unique ecosystem. And I think the key is for us as a network, and for other networks and other businesses looking to try and shore up some of the revenues that are going to be lost by these publishers, is to make sure that we are reaching out and using the language that they understand, and trying to be as supportive and trying to communicate as effectively as we can about how to use the tools, the tech, all of the ways that might not necessarily be familiar to them. And I think that's going to be really critical. So I know that, you know, there are a couple of ongoing projects within the business to try and reach out and support as many of those businesses as possible and try and shore up, as I say, some of their revenues.
And many of those businesses, it does seem, are turning to other networks within the wider industry now to try to make up that shortfall that's going to occur. I know over in America that we've seen a real surge in demand of new publisher applications to both Awin and ShareASale recently, that seems to reflect that trend.
We saw a, just to give you, I mean, what day are we recording this? Recording this on the 16th of April. And so yesterday, the 15th of April, we saw a trebling in the number of new affiliate applications to the ShareASale network, which is, you know, phenomenal, something that they've never seen before. And whilst it's difficult to separate that, the Amazon move, directly from all of the stuff that's happening around the coronavirus, there's no doubt that the combination of those two factors has led to that significant spike. So the challenge for us is to try and support that demand.
You would want to hope, really, that something, a move like this, that negatively perhaps affects Amazon in the future when it comes to being a business partner for these small companies. The further we widen that ecosystem, the better, in my eyes. I think Amazon, much like, in a way, Google's own ecosystem, it controls too many businesses. And I think that if we can, if those companies can spread out to the likes of Awin and other networks, instead of just operating on, an Amazon platform, then that is a good thing.
Yeah, I think if ever there's been a better demonstration of the dangers of not diversifying and not kind of having an even spread across different verticals or sectors, advertisers, whatever it might be, then I struggle to recall of one.
Just to sort of end on this point, really, I mean, the key for these publishers is whether this is a temporary or permanent move, and that we don't know. You know, Amazon's remained pretty tight-lipped on the reasons the reasoning behind why they've made these decisions. So, you know, that's yet to play out, whether this is a permanent move. But clearly, this is something that we need to make sure that we're being supportive and that we're kind of helping those publishers to diversify their incomes, as you say.
Okay, so now I'm joined by Joelle and Alex from our client partnerships team. How are you both doing? You okay?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, so before we start with the interview, I just wanted to kind of get an idea about what you guys are currently working on with the kind of the new team that you've formed and stuff in client partnerships.
Yeah, cool. So we're a pretty newly formed team. So I joined the team in January. And the really idea of the team is to make sure that as a business, we're really focused on our core sectors. So I'm focused on travel and retail, and Alex is focused on telco and finance, and just really making sure that we fully understand the landscapes of what's happening in those environments, not just from affiliate perspective, but completely outside in the whole of the UK and globally.
Yeah, so I suppose, well, along those lines then, with the kind of unprecedented economic situation we're in at the moment with COVID-19 and all the quarantine, what can we, kind of focusing around that with the interview, and you've been doing some kind of research into looking at our data and things like that. With monitoring some of the trends that Awin has been tracking over the last few weeks, can you tell us about any of the changes in the way you've seen people shop?
Yeah, we actually did. We actually have a piece which is on the Awin website that sort of outlines, I guess, the initial top 10 trends we did. So we looked at the key trends within obviously the core verticals, so retail, travel, finance, and telecoms. And I think for some sectors there were some more immediate trends than others. So obviously, I guess, and Joel probably can go into more detail about this, but obviously, like travel and travel insurance, obviously they saw obviously an immediate impact as the lockdown took effect. But some of the more like interesting ones that I saw in my research were the sort of not necessarily panic buying, but I guess like a real surge in people sort of upgrading or switching their broadband providers as people were asked to work from home. So I guess people obviously are getting a lot more acquainted with their internet connections, and we're very keen probably to sort that out at sort of the early on in sort of the lockdown stages. And having a look at data across other Awin advertisers, that trend sort of mirrored as well as other governments sort of put their countries into lockdown as well.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, that kind of makes a lot of sense, really. I even looked at kind of looking broadband myself when I first got into the quarantine stages, because working from home, it does kind of put a lot of stress when you're all working from home and stuff with which broadband provider you're on and things like that. So in terms of those early changes then that you saw, I suppose we spoke a little bit about broadband. What about what about the kind of travel insurance space? Was there any kind of changes there and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, within travel insurance, again, there was an initial peak there within the insurance sector, and then I guess people obviously had all their holidays booked potentially from the January sort of travel peak and stuff, or from earlier, and then people I guess were concerned about protecting as there was obviously more and more restrictions put on which countries you could travel to, and then more uncertainty over whether your trips would go ahead. But after that peak, it sort of, as soon as the sort of pandemic was declared, it obviously new policies wouldn't actually cover the existing pandemic. And I think a lot of travel insurance advertisers decided as well that it probably wasn't the right time to really be pushing that product in the channel. So we sort of, it sort of peaked. And then as soon as the sort of pandemic declaration happened, it pretty much just has dropped down to zero. And I think Joel probably can go into about how that sort of mirrored in the actual travel sector itself.
Yeah, so I suppose travel at the beginning of March took almost the opposite trend to travel insurance. So if you plotted both on a graph, you could literally see travel sales in decline while travel insurance sales were on the up. Obviously, since the Foreign and Commonwealth Office have put a ban on travel, we are seeing a like plus 90 up to 98% decline in travel sales year on year, unfortunately, just at the moment. So very excited to see that turn around again, hopefully soon.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. So I suppose with those lockdown measures, we spoke a little bit about that there. I mean, what kind of, people forced to stay at home, kind of what effect do you think this has had on consumer trends?
Yeah, we've seen some really interesting consumer trends, which marries up with a lot of stories that you're seeing in like the press and on Instagram live feeds. So I suppose the first obvious one is food. So groceries, we've seen take a huge boom. Again, we've been plotting the data, looking for the last couple of months, but comparing that back till Christmas, and we're actually seeing the same level of peaks as we did at Christmas nearly. So the biggest peak was the day before that 16th of March announcement, where we were asked to unframe from unnecessary travel, and sales that day were just 5% under what we saw the week of Christmas, which is insane. And then obviously within the food space, as well as groceries, we're seeing takeaways booming as well. So we're plotting what's happening in the takeaway space, and every weekend you can see that increasing and increasing. And over the bank holiday weekend, it went pretty crazy as well. It did look like in March that Valentine's Day was still the biggest trading day for those fast food retailers, but we are seeing that creep up every weekend still.
Oh yeah. And I suppose like the kind of the gym equipment sector and the sports sector like that would imagine we've seen huge increases in that, like you say, with you can see that in other channels with Instagram and stuff like that. We can see that across there.
Yeah, I mean, the whole country's dialing into Joe Wicks every morning, so I think that's helped. But we had a look at some Google statistics as well, and it looked like within March, queries for gym workout had gone down massively, but queries for home workouts had gone up 90% versus the previous 30 days. So people really want to know how to work out at home because the gyms are shut. On the day that the gyms did shut, so I think it was the weekend of the 20th of March, that weekend alone, we saw sales up 53% for sports equipment alone versus the weekend previous. And the AOV was up 42% as well. So when we had a look, people were investing in really big equipment. So cross trainers, exercise bikes and rowers. And a lot of the sites that we looked at were offering alternative payment methods. So the likes of Klarna, so consumers could split their purchases over 3 monthly payments. We also saw a lot of those sites actually go down for a couple of days towards the end of March, just because of the influx of orders. And I think they were just struggling to deal with the amount of orders coming in. But we seem to have seen a lot of those sites come back now, which is great.
From an affiliate perspective then, are you seeing any pronounced changes in which publisher types are seeing increased activity?
Within telecoms and finance, there's not been like huge radical shifts. Like I think the main impact is, I think a lot of advertisers, because obviously there was a surge in telecoms, a lot of advertisers, I think, sort of stopped sort of promoting as many sort of deals, or didn't want to be seen as incentivizing sales of, I guess, something that was an essential product. And so we've definitely seen, like, I think in terms of the share of like the programs, definitely seeing like things like loyalty and discount code sites sort of take a little bit of a decline in telecoms. Within finance, the big increases and naturally is we're seeing a lot of financial advice sites and content sites like that offer sort of comparison there, sort of taking a bit of an increase. And I guess although generally insurance is down, I think people who are buying it, I think, are being a lot more conscious, and people are thinking a little bit more about how to be a bit more financially savvy, I think, whilst again there's that much uncertainty in the economy. But within the verticals, there's not like, yeah, the program mixes are roughly the same. There definitely have been, I think, a little bit of pullback on deals and sort of incentives there, which naturally have an impact on the affiliate sites that are really focus around that.
Yeah, it's been pretty similar across retail and travel as well. I'd say one really nice thing that we have seen off the back of all of this is the innovation around the charity space. So not just charity publishers, but all publishers are really pulling together and trying to work out how they can use the commissions that are coming in to support the charities that we need most at the moment.
Yeah, that makes sense. But have you seen any unusual trends then come to the fore you didn't necessarily anticipate?
We saw some interesting trends around alcohol, unsurprisingly, in the UK. So the day that the pubs and bars shut, which was that Friday the 20th, on that day alone, we saw sales for alcohol up 300% versus the previous year. So people were definitely had their priorities straight on that day.
I can vouch for that, to be honest with you, as well, personally. Yeah, well, having a birthday during that time kind of meant I'd have to buy loads of alcohol in for me and my housemates, but yeah.
I saw your virtual party, though. It looked like fun.
Good, yeah. It's a bit of an isolation birthday. It was a bit of a weird one.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, I guess, like, I think everyone's doing these sort of video calls and stuff. So I think one of the things that we're starting to see in some telecoms is people sort of looking at, like, more sort of data, like, or faster internet products at the moment. And I think whilst there's been some people have been unable to get like faster fiber speeds, there's definitely been like an increase in sales of mobile broadband products as well, which I think, again, it's quite a niche product. So I guess I think consumer awareness has never been there, but I guess it just shows that people are just being really resourceful now when obviously there's more restrictions on what they can buy.
Yeah, that does make sense as well. Kind of adds up. So yeah, I suppose finally then, just quickly at the end, I know that there's obviously a lot of economic uncertainty and clients are, you know, having to react to what's going on in the current situation. You know, from your point of view, what kind of advice would you offer clients that are looking at the channel a little differently at the moment based on the data that you've had?
I think within the retail space, it's really important at the moment to keep an eye on those trends. We need to understand exactly what consumers want and are happy to purchase right now and react to that. And then following that, I suppose, as well as getting the product right, it's all about getting the messaging right at the moment. Like, content's always been important, but context right now really is key. And people need to tread carefully in terms of the messaging that they're offering consumers.
I mean, yeah, I think messaging is definitely been a key part. And I think over the past couple of weeks, I've definitely seen like the brand, like not just really for the channel, but the general brand messaging of a lot of brands have really shifted on how they can support people, I think, through the current times. And in terms of like in it's like with telco, I think there's been a lot of pushes of giving like a lot of free data to people so that they can stay connected and stuff. So that's we've seen that in the UK, but speaking to like counterparts in France and Germany and Austria and stuff, again, the mobile networks there are providing a lot of like really good sort of things there and really looking after their existing customers. I mean, I guess the advice really though for brands is it's obviously, I guess, within finance and telco, these are subscription products. So these are part of, I guess, people's outgoings. And I think it's very important to sort of consider what you're sort of promoting there and making sure that you're, like, it is important to still be, I think, out there because you're helping people sort of get the most for their money. And that is a positive message. I don't think, I don't think brands should be sort of worried about promoting. I think it's just getting that messaging right to go, but and obviously just really demonstrating what's that value you're providing to that consumer.
So yeah, thank you very much. Thank you much for taking the time to go through a lot of that. Hopefully things will improve soon in terms of our working environment anyway, and we'll be back in the office soon hopefully as well. I'll see you both there.
Yeah, see you soon, Craig. Thank you.
This year, Awin launched a new product called Awin Access, aimed at helping small businesses with digital marketing. And joining us today to talk about more about Access is Awin's Director of Global Operations, Peter Jack. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Kev.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. How's Berlin?
Life in Berlin's actually good. I've been here around 6 months now. Pretty much got to grips with the city and the vibe. It's really chilled and relaxed compared to London. Not quite got to grips with the language or the food yet, though.
Maybe one day.
Well, maybe.
Cool. Well, thanks for taking some time out to talk to us about Awin Access today. For the benefit of people listening who may be less familiar with the service than you are, can you kind of just give us a little bit of a brief synopsis as to what Awin Access is?
Yeah, absolutely. So Awin Access is our new proposition to help support beginners, accelerators, startups and entrepreneurs. In fact, Awin Base was one of the names that was in the running for last year, but Awin Access run out. Awin does a great job of working with brands and a number of SMEs around the globe. But what we really wanted to do was focus on the micro part of SME and build an offering that would appeal to this particular audience segment. Basically, what we wanted to do was lower the entry to barriers as much as possible and streamline the onboarding process to help keep costs down as much as we could there. Awin Access is all about providing the tools and knowledge to empower these brands to run their own successful affiliate programs.
What was the sort of the kernel behind this? So you mentioned sort of reaching out to kind of a new audience, really, that I suppose in the past Awin had sort of chosen not to work with. Why was the timing right to launch Access at this time?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess it was kind of a two-fold process behind that. We acquired a very successful company in the US, Share a Sale, They've really been masters at automating the onboarding process and really taking on a huge volume of customers, but still delivering that high level of satisfaction. And we wanted to look at that business model and take as many learnings as we could to bring into Awin Access. Also, we were really looking at the barriers to entry when SME businesses select a software solution and really understanding the business goals. A huge amount of resources are out there and a huge amount of surveys have been commissioned. One of the interesting ones from Google and understanding the key concerns of UK small and medium-sized businesses and how they use advertising. Respondents in that particular survey really highlighted driving future growth as the main priority. And the study also highlighted the need for SMEs to have access to easy-to-use fast tools to enable them to hit the ground running. A few other key items that came up in some of the research pieces were around price, commitment, flexibility, and trust. So what we did with Awin Access, we tried to tackle all those items. So we have low entry rates, we have short minimum terms, so people are not tied into long contracts. And we have the ability to work with their own marketing budgets and their seasonalities to help establish a really strong publisher base for these advertisers.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you talk about the barriers to entry there. Obviously, we've got a history of working with lots of brands and lots of big brands as well who have a lot of resource available to them. One of the things that I've kind of always, I guess, SMEs struggle with is the fact that they don't necessarily have a huge amount of resource. I mean, you mentioned that Google study, which was particularly interesting. And one of the things that they reference in there is the amount of time, how time poor a lot of these SMEs are in order, you know, they've got to juggle a number of different commitments, of which digital and online is a small part of that. But they probably recognize there's a huge opportunity there. So kind of what's the bridge between those two things? How is the level of service? How is the product different from kind of the traditional product offerings that we've had?
Well, again, we've tried to keep it as flexible as possible with Awin Access. What we've done is try to automate as much of the process as possible, therefore keeping, you know, headcount down and staff costs down, which have allowed us to keep those prices low. And what we've wanted to do is try and support and upskill these people, because we know potentially they're not well versed in the affiliate world. So we've created a lot of material around videos on how best to manage your program. We've created a lot of case studies that have shown, you know, how to really get the most out of Awin Access. And we also run some tutorials and videos every few weeks to make sure people can get the most out of their campaign. So it is a difficult balancing act, but one of the future goals for Awin Access and something that we're piloting at the moment is how can we give them access to a level of service if they need it. So we're creating some additional packages that people can potentially upgrade or bolt on when they need some additional support and help, potentially from an experienced account manager. Maybe they are understaffed or resourced, or they're going through a busy time at the moment and need some extra support.
Yeah, I think that one of the, you mentioned there about training and education and kind of for those of us that have kind of worked in the affiliate world for a long time, we kind of think take a lot of that knowledge for granted, and it can kind of be quite daunting. We've always found one of the best ways of being able to showcase success is through kind of case studies. Are there kind of any early indicators, any kind of early examples of kind of rising star brands that have kind of really hit the ground running?
Perhaps we shouldn't have been surprised, but we've actually seen, you know, a huge number of early successes with Awin Access. And we've created some great studies that people can read about on the Awin Access page. If I pull a few examples out, Hersey & Sons, one of the few remaining traditional silversmiths in the UK, actually a father and son team. They were one of the earlier brands to join onto Awin Access, and they really wanted to drive brand awareness and partner with some of the larger publishers on the network. And, you know, it's gone really well for them. They've been very happy with the level of support, and actually Now the affiliate channel is helping them drive 15% of their total online sales, which is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, this wonderful brand is still very early on its affiliate journey. And, you know, there's a huge educational piece on different types of affiliates that they can work with, and also some of the tactics that they can bring into their campaign there, which will really help cement them and take them to the next level on the affiliate channel. We've also built a great relationship with Founders Factory. They've launched over 100 startups from their London, Paris and Joburg offices, and they help deliver an expert mentoring team with strong experience building and scaling startups. They quickly saw the value that Awin Access could bring to some of the startups in leveraging a simple low-cost commercial model. And I myself, James and Kate went in to run a session actually on best practice via the affiliate channel, and we brought a lot of their startups onto Awin Access.
Okay, so what about agencies as well? Because I can imagine that certainly, you know, there's this kind of tier of SME agencies, affiliate agencies that are out there. I guess that this is a sort of a good target product for them, for those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we've received a fantastic response from agencies and actually a lot of the self-employed consultants since launching Awin Access. For those that specialise, as you touched on in the you know, the SME and the startup segment, it's really given them the chance to bring advertisers to Awin that they previously couldn't have due to, you know, some of our barriers to entry, such as cost and the speed of bringing these clients on board. And the great thing is, you know, now we've built these relationships with a lot of these consultants and brands. They're really proactively bringing on us a lot of new leads and a lot of customers that they're recommending our way, which is really nice. ThoughtMix is a great example in the UK, and they've really embraced the partnership with Awin Access. And, you know, I think we're working with around 60 clients now via that particular partnership.
So we're recording this podcast the middle of April 2020, where we're obviously in the midst of lockdown because of the coronavirus. But in light of that, there's obviously a huge amount of pressure on small businesses at the moment. You know, many of them are making daily decisions. It's a very fast moving event. In light of that, kind of any help that can be offered with kind of suppliers and businesses that they're working with is probably welcome. What are we doing from an Access point of view to help those types of businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as soon as the crisis hit, what was really nice, everybody from all parts of the business had ideas on what we could try and do to support in the current environment. On the Awin Access side, for example, we decided that we would look to lower the fees even further. In fact, for the first 3 months, offering no fixed charges, meaning that advertisers would only pay on completed sales. Currently, we're looking to run that promotion until June, but obviously that's dependent on how things start to return to normal. The second item that we looked at with Awin Access was because it's been so well received in the UK market and in the current climate, was what could we do with our future rollout roadmap for other countries? And the team really went away and looked at the current plan just to see if we could bring some of those other countries much earlier to market. And the good news is that we've been able to put some additional resources in to bring the DACH and Benelux regions, the Benelux regions, to market much sooner. And they'll be launching next month, which is great news. One of the other nice things is Mish, who's our business development director in the UK market, has really been focused on building up the relationships for Awin Access, and very recently has set up a collaboration with the Federation of Small Businesses. And what we want to do there is offer a free consultation to any members that are thinking of joining the Awin Access product, help answer any questions, and really kind of showcase our kind of experience and what we can do to help in the current times. You know, we really wanted to make sure that we could share as much of our knowledge with the people that require it the most at this time.
Great. Okay. So if anybody listening is interested, if they think that it resonates with their businesses or they just want to find out more information, what's the best way that they can get that knowledge?
The best place to start is on the awin.com website, and then head over to the AWIN Access section, or, you know, likewise, just type AWIN Access into Google. We've got all the latest information. The page is regularly updated with any new case studies or testimonials, so people can really do a lot of research and read how we're working with the brands that we currently are. And, you know, take it from there. The sign-up process and application form is all on the website, and it's a very quick and easy process to follow through.
Fantastic. Well, I think that pretty much covers everything off. As Pete says, if you want to find out more information, go to awin.com, and Access is very clearly signposted on the homepage. Thanks, Pete. Stay safe.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
I'm now joined by Chloe Hall, who manages the marketing side of things for affiliate business Revlifter, but who has recently thrown her efforts into supporting NHS workers on the front line of the coronavirus crisis through Furloughed Foodies London. Hi, Chloe. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I was hoping you could tell us a bit about what it is that you've been doing with Furloughed Foodies.
Yeah, so we're Furloughed Foodies London, and we essentially exist to feed NHS workers during this pandemic. And this is all done through a network of volunteers who deliver home-cooked meals to doctors and nurses across hospitals in London. And the reason why we do this is because after speaking to some NHS workers in various hospitals, we realised that they were receiving lots of gifts and donations of unhealthy meals and snacks, like pizzas and chocolates and things. Although this is really kind, it isn't necessarily what they need. What NHS workers need is, you know, healthy, nutritious meals to keep them going through their long shifts. And actually, doctors on COVID-19 wards aren't allowed in any other parts of the hospital, and canteens in hospitals close at 5 p.m. So many workers are really struggling when it comes to mealtimes.
Great. So what's been the reception so far?
It's just been absolutely amazing. So, you know, we started this just to try and make a difference. It was really just a group of friends cooking some meals for some hospitals, just to try and give back in some small way. And now it's grown to, you know, we've got over 200 volunteers now. We've done over 40 deliveries in the last couple of weeks across 15 hospitals in London. And the feedback we received from NHS workers has just been absolutely amazing. They're just so grateful to receive healthy hot meals.
And I imagine that the you've had a huge kind of response from the general public in terms of donating kind of like their time and effort into kind of producing food and delivering it to hospitals. I wondered what some of the logistical challenges of that might have kind of involved from your perspective.
Yeah, so the main challenge really has been the organisation of all the volunteers. So since we set up our Instagram page and since we set up our website, we received over 200 requests within a couple of days. So that was obviously quite a lot of admin. But then we roped in the help of Eliane Carmona, who's also been furloughed. So now she's basically running all of the operations and organising all of the volunteers in North and East London, which has definitely helped, you know, streamline our processes and things are running a lot smoother. And one of the other things that has been a top priority for us is, you know, understandably, we're all volunteers and we're all cooking in our home kitchens and we're not cooking in commercial kitchens. So we've taken steps to ensure that all of our volunteers, you know, are adhering to the government standards in food safety and hygiene, and, you know, being extra stringent considering we are in this pandemic.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier that the response from the NHS staff who've been receiving this food has been really positive, and I believe that your Instagram page has kind of shared a few images of those successful deliveries and some hungry doctors and nurses looking quite pleased to kind of get those that food in.
Yeah, so that's really what keeps us going. That's what keeps us motivated, is seeing all those pictures of all of the, you know, all the NHS workers just being happy to receive these meals. And we, you know, we've had requests from hospitals across the UK asking us to deliver to them. So there's definitely a need for this. And we've had messages from, you know, countless NHS workers just being so thankful that we're doing this. So that definitely keeps us going.
So obviously this has grown quite rapidly, Furloughed Foodies, with a huge amount of demand from other hospitals, as you mentioned. And I wonder, given the speed at which it's all evolved, have you had to involve or kind of have other people support you in terms of organising it all?
Yes, absolutely. So now that we have got, you know, an army of volunteers helping us, this requires a lot of management. So now we've roped in the help of Eliane, who's now obviously running operations. We've also got on board a fundraising coordinator who's helping us to focus our efforts on raising more cash so we can continue this service for as long as we need to. And actually, just recently, we appointed a strategic advisor who's actually the chief marketing officer at The Economist, which has been amazing. And hopefully he'll be able to, you know, help us spread the word and ultimately help us raise more donations so we can expand to more hospitals, continue this service for as long as necessary.
Great. And if we've got any listeners that are keen to get involved with Furloughed Foodies, how can they do so?
So there's three ways you can get involved. So you can either cook, deliver or donate. What I would say to everyone is if you visit our website, which is www.furloughedfoodieslondon.co.uk, and if you want to volunteer, then fill in the form. And if there's a need in your area, we'll get in touch. But actually, we have got quite a lot of volunteers now. So what we really are asking for is just more donations so we can continue this service.
Well, it's a fantastic initiative and it's really great to hear more about it. We wish you the best of luck with it over the next few weeks. And yeah, thanks again for dropping into the podcast to tell us more.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Really great initiative there from Chloe, and a great example of some of the ways in which people from the industry are really using their ingenuity and effort to support frontline key workers and others in need of a helping hand at the moment. AWIN's been initiating a variety of its own projects recently to better support our partners in the industry, and you can find information on all of these on the Coronavirus Hub on your local AWIN site's news and events section. Now, I've just wanted to highlight a few of those that we've launched in the last few weeks, and Craig, I know that you are kind of familiar with the performance industry tracker that we've launched.
Yeah. So we've launched on our website, awin.com. If you go to the news and events section, there is a section on there with an interactive report to look at kind of sector performance week on week. So if you work in a particular sector, if you specialise in that, you can benchmark yourself and your own results against what we're seeing across the whole network. That's broken down by region as well. So if you operate solely in a particular region, or actually if you operate globally, you can do both. That's for both, you know, publishers and advertisers. So if you're an advertiser that wants to see actually, you know, how you're doing compared against your own market, you can do. And if you're a publisher that specializes in that particular as well, you can.
And that's something that we'll actually be looking to evolve and iterate over the coming weeks. So do keep checking out that tracker as we start to add in additional data insights across a kind of range of different aspects. Now, Kev, you've also been collaborating on a document that's now been released through the UI that reports on some of the commission changes that have been occurring across some of the advertiser programs that we feature.
Yeah, so one of the pieces of feedback that we got very early on in this sort of current crisis was that with a number of advertisers making quite sort of rapid changes to their programs, that it was quite difficult to kind of keep track of everything. So the UK team, and this is initially a UK initiative, but we're looking to roll it out into other markets. The UK team sort of started collating all of this feedback. And what they've done is they've compiled it all in this kind of evolving working document that's now available from the UI. So if you're a publisher in the UK, if you log into your account, you'll see at the top of the UI a blue ribbon. There's actually two blue ribbons. There's one which has a publisher survey in it. So we're looking to collate some feedback, which we'd encourage as many publishers to fill in as possible. And that also contains another link to give you the ability to share with us any kind of really interesting initiatives that you're currently running as a publisher around sort of trying to help brands or trying to push sort of positive messaging at this difficult time. And then underneath that, there is the ribbon that contains the different advertiser changes that have been made. And it might be a drop in commission. It could be a commission hike. It could be a temporary suspension. And within that, we've got sort of all the finer details about the changes that have been made specifically with those programs. Now, just to one word of caution, obviously, these are rapidly changing times. So there may be aspects of it that go out of date quite quickly. If you're a publisher and you know that there's an advertiser list that isn't listed that's actually made some changes, we've also given you the ability within that spreadsheet to submit your own details, so you can say, I've actually spotted this account that I think has made changes here, and then we'll reevaluate all of those submissions and update that report. But it's a really useful guide, as I say, a first place to go if you are concerned about the range of programs that you're promoting and whether that you're going to be impacted financially.
Yeah, in addition to that, we've also been developing a series of local business information hubs. And this is putting together local resources from governments in several markets that are designed to, we really wanted to highlight the financial aid packages, information around kind of employment changes at the moment, particularly where workers are being furloughed. And we wanted to collate all of that information from relevant government departments and other relevant trade and industry bodies that could help our partners of every shape and size and sector ensure that they continue to sustain their businesses at this time, which is obviously quite unprecedented. So again, you can find each of these hubs within the local market coronavirus areas of the AWIN site. We've currently got live the UK, US, Italy, and the Netherlands, and we're hoping to also roll out similar hubs for Germany and France in the coming week or so. So do keep your eyes peeled for those if you're looking for a little bit of extra support or help in navigating, obviously, the kind of confusing amount of information that's out there right now to help support businesses from government. alongside that, we've got a host of other content that analyzes some of the trends that we've been tracking across AWIN over the recent weeks and months. And you'll find all of that content, as we mentioned, on the coronavirus hub, which is located in the news and events section. But that's all we've got time for in this month's episode. And we will be back in a few weeks, probably remotely again, with another edition of AWIN Talks with another selection of guests from across the industry. In the meantime, thanks for joining us. And stay safe wherever you are in the world. And it's goodbye from me, goodbye from Kev.
Cheerio.
And goodbye from Craig.
Goodbye.